This is the Short Commute Podcast. Welcome back after a short or long, however you feel about these hiatus. We got more episodes coming your way on a more regular basis. The doldrums of summer have hit finally. Did you have a busy first half of summer, Pastor Drew?
I had a terribly busy first half of the summer. I'm hoping that the second half we can kick back and enjoy a little bit more as a family. How was yours?
It's crazy to think it's half over.
Yes, that's true.
I refuse to believe that. It was wild, but same for me. After Gibbsville Kids Camp this week, I get a good 6 weeks to start preparing for next year. So that's good.
Wonderful.
We have had a busy youth group year, stay-at-home mission trip, Camp Calvin, Life Fest, Gibbsville Kids Camp. You have been busy with different projects, but what we want to talk about today is the summer series.
Yeah, the series on Judges that we just finished up. I thought we would just say a few words, or I would, and you can have some input on it too. But I just wanted to kind of recap that a little bit and just say how much I enjoyed preaching that series and going through the Judges. When I was a kid, the Judges' stories were my absolute favorites.
I remember you saying in the sermon, Samson in particular, right?
Samson in particular, but, you know, just, I don't know if I'm proud of it, but for a young boy, you know, such graphic stories tend to keep you on the edge of your seat, and I really perked up and paid attention to those stories when I learned about them in school and on the rare occasion when I heard them preached. But obviously, going through it now as an adult and as a pastor, it was a completely different perspective on some of them.
Did you have a favorite? I know Samson was your favorite story growing up, but did you have a favorite that you preached through this time around?
I would say no. It was interesting to read through and to prepare sermons on the different judges this time around with more of a critical eye for their shortcomings, rather than the amazing victories that they accomplished, and in Samson's case, you know, his amazing gift of strength, which obviously is impressive to a boy and to a lot of people.
Did you end up sharing? I miss more services this time of year than any other time of the year. But did you? We had talked about that bit about Samson from Andy Stanley. Did you end up sharing that?
I didn't end up sharing that. It was interesting. I mentioned to Zach a few weeks ago that I was watching a Right Now Media Bible study on the Judges, and one of the things that Andy Stanley, who was the one who led it, mentioned was that he doesn't think that Samson was this big, buff, strong guy, because if he was this huge, muscular guy, then these feats of strength wouldn't have been terribly impressive to people. They would have just looked at that and said, well, yeah, of course he can do that. He's such a strong guy. Andy Stanley made the comment, I think he's a guy that just looked like me, you know? Mm-hmm. Like a guy that doesn't look like he can and do Andy anything. Stanley's and that's why it was so miraculous. So, no, I didn't use that because I don't know if I've bought into that
right,
quite.
Yeah.
But
I don't know how much credence it has, but it's an interesting thought.
Right, right.
I did have a favorite. I really appreciated the few sermons you did on Gideon, and the one in particular was from chapter 7, the battle, and you kind of brought to life, it had always been confused at when the Lord is kind of whittling down Gideon's army, why lapping up water was at all important, and you kind of brought to light that those who stooped down and had a drink with their hand were kept because they stayed in a ready position. They were kind of always prepared for battle. They were a confident bunch of people. And the people who lapped the water up with their tongues were vulnerable. They weren't prepared. They weren't being wise. And so it got me to thinking about this progression that happens in chapter 7. And you mentioned this too. The first way God whittles down the army is, he says, anyone who trembles with fear, send back. So it's like this distinction between those who are slaves to fear and those who have been set free mm-hmm. from fear. And that's true of our Christian life. There are people who are slaves to fear, and then there are believers who have been set free from fear. But then further than that, God also cares about how that gets worked out. So there are those who have been set free from fear but aren't wise and aren't prepared and aren't living ready, and so they are the ones who lap up the water with their tongue. But then there are also those who have been believers, who have been set free from fear, who are like the bridesmaids who are waiting for the groom to come, keeping their lamps lit and prepared, watching for the coming of the Lord. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting foreshadowing, if you will, of Jesus and what he would do for the people, and that progression that, yes, believing matters, but also those people who, like James says, true faith means living it out and being ready and being prepared and being wise. So that was great. I loved that from chapter 7.
Well, you just brought it out a lot better than I did. I'm glad that you were able to get that out of that sermon. And yes, I did bring that up. I just didn't explain it nearly so beautifully. I mean, ultimately, God whittles down, and with that explanation, it makes more sense as to why he let go of the people that he did. But ultimately, it's also wise to remember that God could have used 300 complete idiots and still won the battle, like he could today.
Yeah.
But who he chooses to use and who he chooses to allow to participate in this great work that he's doing in the world, whether it was back then or today, are indeed, like you said, the ones who are set free from fear, the ones who come into that new life with readiness and a willingness to be used.
So the 300 or whatever he ended up with were maybe the most prepared 300.
Yeah. There. And that also makes sense in the context of Judges, because the big problem in that whole narrative of the Judges is people living careless lives and following the wrong things, and God choosing to use those 300 in that situation, the 300 that I suppose were the most intentional about what they were getting themselves into and why.
Which is a strange thing. That's true, but it's strange because almost every other historical figure we read about in the Bible is intentionally flawed. Like, God always uses flawed people. And here we're saying how also it's important that these people are equipped people and prepared people or strong people. So that's this weird dichotomy, but maybe it's just to say God can use anyone.
Yeah, well, and that's another thing that goes through all of Judges. You had a couple of judges, Deborah in particular, that comes to mind. Really, you know, we know that Deborah was a flawed person, and Barak, who her right-hand man was, definitely was, it seemed like. But Deborah, there's not a bad word that's said about her. She's perhaps the only judge that doesn't have some significant failing or shortcoming, and yet, obviously, the fact that she's a woman makes her unique, and the fact that God uses her is significant. But I think Judges not only foreshadows Christ, and, you know, as I was preaching throughout the series, makes us really long for Christ, but Judges foreshadows other things too. And perhaps one of those things, like you said, is the way we are to live our Christian lives. In Gideon's narrative, in that case, with without fear, and also in readiness, knowing that the victory has already been won, because God is in the mix with us.
It's also interesting the way the book as a whole foreshadows Christ, and we mentioned it in the sermon introduction video. In Joshua, we watch them kind of complete their journey and arrive at the promised land fully. But Judges, the very next book, is still about a journey, because now we watch the people try to figure out spiritually how they ought to live now that they have a land and they have some peace, and they don't deal with it well. And over and over and over and over and over again, that's why we call it a cycle, they have to send a new Christ figure to redeem them and save them over and over and over again. And once and for all, God did that through the person of Jesus Christ, and that's a wonderful thing too.
Yeah, well said.
Well, thank you for listening. We will be back with more of these on a more regular basis, like I said. We will see you next time.